This episode of Anomaly was recorded just a day before its release. Therefore, it has undergone minimal editing. Additionally, this episode carries an explicit tag in iTunes for both language and content. So you might want to either use your headphones or ask the little ones to leave the room. Thanks!
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
My name's Sue. I'm not good, I'm not nice, I'm just right. And I am an anomaly.
My name is Casey, and dwarfs are very upsetting, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Angela, and I want to go to the festival, and I am an anomaly. Hi.
Hi, we have a straggler.
Are you calling me a straggler?
I don't think you mean straggler. I think you mean stowaway, maybe?
Maybe. Oh my gosh, you guys. This show is my jam. I was in this show twice.
I know.
In the 90s. Weren't you
Rapunzel in one of the productions?
I was Rapunzel in one of the productions. I was Snow White. I've also been the giant and the mother, not the stepmother, the fairy godmother in the tree.
Oh, uh-huh. And Cinderella's mother.
Cinderella's mother. And I think I was grandma too. And I understudied for Red, but I never got to play her. So that was very sad. But I know this show backwards, forwards, and in my sleep. So I love it. Which made the watching of the movie all that more upsetting.
Yeah.
To me.
It's hard. So,
yeah.
It's hard. It's hard.
I don't think we introduced the episode to discuss. A few years back, we covered Into the Woods, the stage version, and now we're going to do a bit of a compare, contrast, and review of the movie adaptation, which was released within the past year, directed by Rob Marshall, starring Meryl Streep.
Right.
So
that's what this is.
That is what this episode is.
Okay.
So, real quick, what has everybody been up to over the past few weeks?
Oh, gosh. A lot. Actually, I've been watching Russell play. He's determined to beat every single Lego video game. So we've been doing that a lot. And I started playing Skyrim again because I reinstalled Steam on one of my computers. So I was like, oh, look, I have Skyrim. It's free. I want to start playing that again. So I did that. And otherwise, I haven't been that nerdy because I've been super busy at work. What about you guys?
Well, I've been watching another period on Comedy Central. It is my new favorite show. If you're a big fan of period pieces and anything making fun of them.
Oh, good.
It's amazing. It's so good. It's like, it's Downton Abbey meets Keeping Up with Kardashians, basically.
Wow. I like that that Comedy Central show, Drunk History.
Oh, I love that show.
I love that show. I could just watch it for hours. It's funny. And it's comedy in costume as well.
Mm-hmm. Pertinent to the podcast, I met Chip Zion on Thursday night.
I saw that on Facebook. That's amazing. How did that occur?
He is currently in a show that actually is closing tomorrow, which is the day this is coming out, called It Should Have Been You. And a friend of mine from high school is the wig mistress on that show. And another friend of mine knows the stage manager. So we went to see the show on Thursday night, and they put us on the list to go backstage. And the stage manager friend, because the other friend was still, you know, getting the wig room together after the show, was just walking us around and introducing us to people. And, you know, I talked to Chip Zion for a couple minutes. He introduced himself to me like I didn't know who he was. I was like, do you not understand that you have been a figure of my childhood for as long as I can remember?
Oh my gosh.
We talked about the reunion concert a little bit that I also went to. And then, like, we kept meeting people like Montego Glover and David Hyde Pierce.
Cool. That's
yeah,
awesome.
It was fun. It was fun times.
Your life is
amazing. Your life is so cool.
Well, that's what happens when you live in New York.
You get to meet
cool people. I mean, that is, but you have to pay what, like $18,000 a month in rent or something like that?
Close.
I'm joking, but yeah, that is very cool. I need to come up there and meet someone interesting. I could spend 5, 6, 10 years there and I'd probably never meet anybody interesting.
I'm the kind of person who doesn't notice celebrities on the street. Because I'm just in my own little, like, brain world. But it's friends of mine who are the extroverts who go and make the connections and bring me along to things.
Well, but I've heard that, you know, I've seen interviews with celebrities that say that they like that about New York. That's one of the cities they can't, because New Yorkers are so focused on their own thing more than in other places, that people leave them alone.
Yeah.
In New York, so that they actually prefer living there. So I have heard that. So you are just a true New Yorker, Sue.
I suppose.
Transition.
Y'all want to jump in?
No, but let's
do it. Well, it's fun to talk about.
It is. I love this show. To be honest, the Bernadette production wasn't the first one I was truly introduced to. The first time I ever heard about this show was during the Tony Awards, where it starred Vanessa Williams. And
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. But it was, you know, it was an interesting production piece to watch. So I looked up the DVD and I was able to watch that. And of course, that's been with me for years and years now. Mm-hmm. So going into this, I was very trepidatious. I also have a bias against Rob Marshall because I kind of see beyond the curtain that the wizard is hiding behind.
Yeah.
I guess, what did we like?
I have some things.
Yeah, before we go into extremely biased territory, let's talk about what we liked about this movie.
Well, I actually liked the casting of Emily Blunt and Chris Pine, honestly. And I was on the plus side of Anna Kendrick. I'm not going to say that I was completely excited, but I wasn't completely upset either. And then the other thing I liked was Colleen Atwood, to me, like, is Joss Whedon beer and pizza. I really, it doesn't matter what she does. It's awesome and brilliant, and I love her. So the costumes were great. Even though I did not, never mind, sorry. There was costumes I didn't like, even though I love Colleen Atwood because she's my goddess. But that's pretty much, that's it. And I do have some other things, but some of the other stuff that I liked is married to things that I didn't like. So it would be better in the rest of the discussion. Does that make sense?
Yes. I personally loved Meryl. I thought Meryl was the saving grace of this movie because she's Meryl Streep and she's had like, what, 20 Oscar nominations? She could like shit in a bucket and she could win an award.
So you feel about Meryl how I feel about Colleen Atwood.
Kind of. So I loved her. I also, you know, here's the thing. I liked the performances, but like Angela said, it's also linked to stuff that I didn't really like. The special effects were wonderful.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
The scene design was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. The scene design was great. Yeah, that's all I'm going to stick to for right now. Sue?
It's really hard, right? Because I actually just listened to your Attack of the Clones episode this morning, Angela. And I feel like it's the same problem, right? It's really good casting for the most part. But, like, the rest of it's just lacking. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's I actually really like Lilia Crawford, the Little Red. But I think that is because I have seen her on stage several times. And I like her, but not necessarily her scenes and things like right. that. I would agree with that. Meryl is definitely the high point, even though she, for me, still falls a little bit short of Bernadette Peters. But everybody falls short of Bernadette Peters, who is an actual wizard.
I have actually met Bernadette Peters.
So have I.
So that's one thing, randomly, not living in New York. Oh, my mom also, she's here. She also met Bernadette Peters.
Oh, let's all talk about how we all met Bernadette Peters. Oh, wait, I can't.
Elaine Stritch was there, too.
Don't talk to me.
Okay, sorry.
No, go the ahead. Funniest scene in the movie to me, though, was Agony.
I thought Agony was great.
It was.
I have that on
really
my list.
Hilarious. I liked it a lot.
The thing is that's one of the things. That's one of the things that cannot. You can't overdo. I don't think. Mm-hmm. And they. I think of a lot of the parts of the show. I keep saying show movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. It. They, I think that was spot on. I really do. I agree. I have it under my spot on category. And I honestly thought too, and that's why I liked Chris Pine. I don't think the other guy got enough screen time for me to really care. Mm-hmm. But for Agony, I think they did a really great job. And honestly, okay, go with me here. Removing the context, if you just saw the performance of Your Fault by itself, like you were watching a snippets, a music video of that cut, I thought that Your Fault by itself was pretty good. That was just me. Like I said, remove it. I said remove it and just like as if the things before it and after it didn't happen, but you were just watching it as a singular thing. I don't know. Because I cannot say that much else about anything.
I was not a fan of Jack, so which made me
well. I wasn't
not
either.
Like,
but
really, like
saying,
Your Fault.
I'm just saying, like, just as a, you know, I'm trying to be nice because I thought the pacing of Your Fault was actually more correct than some of the other songs.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that. Yeah. I'll give you
because
that.
It matched that Sondheim energy better than everything mm-hmm. else.
Yeah. I also knew in the back of my head that Your Fault would have been the hardest.
Oh, it
song
is.
Song to film.
Yeah.
It's hardest song to learn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I also think, going back to Meryl, I think Stay With Me was beautiful. I think that was a beautiful, it was beautifully done.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous song.
I was
song.
Like, you get it. You understand the song. And then the rest of it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have to say, I do love Christine Baranski, like as a, I enjoy watching her perform.
I do too.
And so, I was really just meh about the stepmother and the stepsisters. I didn't not like them. I just, you know, meh.
They could have done more.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, they weren't, you know, if it's a zero scale, they weren't negative, but they weren't really very far in the positive.
Right.
They weren't memorable.
No. I did kind of like their costumes, though. But
because
again,
it looks like Colleen Atwood.
Yeah. I have blinders on in that. And I admit it. I admit it ahead of time. So anyway, go ahead. So do we get to start bitching about things now?
Yes, let's start. Where was the fucking sex in the show?
Okay. First of all, the casting of Little Red and Jack was way too young.
I agree. I think that Little Red was only a little bit too young. Maybe like 2 years. Jack was way too young.
Way too young.
Way too young.
That, it just, because it didn't, the whole scene with the wolf might as well not even be in there. Like, why didn't they just cut it?
Oh my God, can we talk about Johnny Depp and his Tex Avery wolf zoot suit?
I have no idea.
With candy in the lining.
Like, what is... Okay. You know what I think happened? Okay. This is what I think happened. I think that somebody who had seen an ad for the show, wrote the script and then put the songs in and like directed it. Like, you, like if you were to see an ad for the show and think, oh, Fractured Fairy Tale, blah, 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 these things. Okay. Oh, somebody wrote some songs to go with this. All right, we'll put those in there. I feel like instead of actually doing all of the good things that are good about Into the Woods, that's what they did. They were like, oh, here, let's do this. It's a little weird and funky. All of the themes that are the most important in the whole show are like completely thrown aside, except for little bitty glimpses. Like they took out the, like they just took out, and no, no more. What? Sorry, I'm ahead of myself.
Okay. One thing at a time. Okay.
Guess who wrote the screenplay, Angela?
Who?
James Lapine.
See, I don't understand.
I agree with you.
Who edited the screenplay then? Who script doctored it? Because it just doesn't make any sense.
I know. It only lists his name.
They have good source material. What's going on?
Okay. Here's what I think. I've seen another movie written by James Lapine. It has Bernadette Peters. It has Hugh Grant. I don't remember the name of it. I remember it was cute. However, I kept thinking throughout watching this, this would be better as a play. This seems to be written like a play. So it has been years since James Lapine has written that screenplay. So now he's adapting his own work. And it's just a mess. I really think he would have benefited from a co-writer. Just like I think Rob Marshall benefits from a co-director.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just nobody was censoring them or telling them, hey, the pacing is off. Hey, this isn't working.
Well, I don't know about that, right? Because in the news the whole time that this movie was in production were stories about the relationship with Disney. Because it is a Disney movie. And that's why Rapunzel doesn't die. That's why the what they call the body count in the movie is so low. That's why somebody decided that this had to be a PG movie so it would be okay for kids.
But that's the problem. This show is not for kids.
It's
and
not
I think
for
that's
kids.
Where Disney got confused.
Exactly.
They thought, oh, fairy tale property.
That's the entire point, right? Is that who knows if this is really like James Lapine suddenly being unable to write his own material that he's already written before,
or if this
is bowing to what some executive at Disney demanded that this movie be.
And I want to get more into this as well because, you know, in addition to the lack of, you know, sexual references and the sexual topic, they kept a lot of the more violent, grotesque things like cutting off the stepsister's heels and cutting off their toes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They killed Jack's mom, but you don't see her die.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, you know, it reminds me of this documentary called Unrated, which may not be on Netflix anymore, but it mainly talks about the MPAA, you know, being like, oh, this extremely violent movie can be PG-13. Oh, but a woman is having an orgasm over here. That's rated R.
Right. No, exactly. I agree with that. I feel like the thing with the, especially the sexuality with the wolf and Little Red for me, the whole point of that is that here's this girl who's like right on the edge. And it's a sexual temptation for him and for her. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed, that's how it's supposed to read. And it's supposed to be a little awkward, but when you have somebody who is actually sexy, like Johnny Depp, doing a part like that with a girl who is obviously pre-pubescent or just at the edge, that it turns gross. It's not interesting and exploring sexuality anymore. It's disgusting and it's about pedophiles.
Yeah. And originally the actress who was going to play Little Red was like 8 or 9.
like this girl in 2 years could have done this.
Yeah, she was only a little too young, like 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. But Jack, I agree, was way too young.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing with Sondheim's material. His songs are so introspective and they're really most of the songs in this show, as well as the other shows, are like inner monologues.
They're soliloquies.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be. And she was singing to the baker.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Was singing to the baker. It's like, it's very hard for,
you know what it is?
What?
It's because people don't, okay, It's because they think the general public can't get musicals. I think that's why. Because we get it, because we get musicals. You know, you watch musicals from like the golden age, you know, Hollywood, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Meet Me in St. Louis, that kind of stuff. And they do that. They sing to the camera. Mm-hmm. And that audience was able to get it. And we get it because we understand this world. But they think that the modern American public cannot get the whole sing to the camera thing. And so they just they choose to, hey, silver platter. See, she's telling someone a story. It makes sense, people, when it really doesn't. They just don't give the audience enough credit. That's what I think is happening.
Well, you see, I think it's another reason. I think because you see Cinderella's song and you see Moment in the Woods, and those are clearly monologues.
Yes.
Those are clearly monologue songs. But with the kids, they're singing to the baker. And I'm like, oh, it's because either they think the kids can't have introspective moments or can't act them, mm-hmm. or maybe the kids just couldn't act them and they had to make that happen.
Mm, that could be.
Yeah. I don't know about Jack, but Little Red could have acted it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If given the opportunity to do so.
Mm-hmm. But oh, I agree.
I Know Things Now and Giants in the Sky and Steps on the Palace and even Moments in the Woods.
Moments in the Woods, uh-huh.
Are all about this experience that I have that I'm learning something about myself.
Yes.
And the only person who is alone on screen for her entire song is the baker's wife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I agree. I agree. Well, and the other thing is when they pulled some really good moments though, where you get that Sondheim energy and then it goes right back to something that doesn't make any sense. And one of the things I was the most disappointed in is one of my favorite things is this whole idea of the first act, right? So it's all these different stories that we're familiar with coming together and in the woods. And then it's all happily ever after. And then you get that I wish from Cinderella, mm-hmm. you know, and then you mm-hmm. see that, the beanstalk growing. Like that is a huge part of the stage play. And it's such an important moment, and the pacing of that moment is really important to how the show goes. And there was no even sense of that, like, oh, here we are, happy ever after. And you get a moment before everything goes to crap. And then the going to crap didn't make any sense because in the play, as you know, you get kind of this, oh my gosh, everything's boring. Everything's annoying. This is not what I thought it was going to be. You have some of these introspective, oh, the baby's crying. And then they're like, okay, I know how we can fix this. Let's do what we did before and go into the woods. That's how it's supposed to go. And then everything goes to crap.
The whole point but of instead, Act 2 is after, yeah. ever after.
But mm-hmm. it happened so quickly, you didn't even get 1 second of ever after.
Nope.
That's the whole point of the show. And you didn't get it.
It was so... It wasn't paced properly. It seemed like Cinderella got married. Oh, the giant is suddenly here. Oh, yeah. Everything's going to shit. Yeah, and it's like, it's that you need that breathing space.
You do.
Between the action. I mean, I can understand Ever After getting cut. I get it. But right. you can still show through cinematic magic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you can have that action together.
Speaking of magic,
go ahead.
How about
yes.
an Immaculate Conception?
That was weird.
Oh, that creeped me out.
That was really creepy.
That was creepy.
I looked at Kevin and I was like, that's not how it's supposed to happen.
No.
Jim just stopped watching with me because that's what I was doing the whole whole thing. I was like, oh, this is not, okay, I'm going to go do something else.
I started messaging Casey at like the first lyric change and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I can't do this.
I was the drill sergeant going, you will watch this movie.
Why? And I guess I sort of get it, but like even the lyric change for the Steps of the Palace, again, they were serving the audience on the platter. Look, she's imagining herself in this environment. And that's why she's singing this. And they had to do the change of the lyrics to, you know, just to change tenses, because technically she was frozen in time on the steps instead of singing about it after. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They changed that lyric because I think we're too stupid to, you know, get it. I don't know. That's just me. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I'm still on that Immaculate Conception. That is not the baker's Sorry. Baby. That is the witch's.
I
that
agree.
Is the witch's baby.
That's weird. It's so weird. So weird. And, okay, since we're talking about that part, okay, I do love Meryl Streep, but I did not like the change. That's the costume that I was not a fan of, was the witch's costume.
The beautiful costume?
Yeah, I thought it was icky. I don't know.
I feel like it wasn't enough of a change.
No.
But, you see, the thing is that with other productions, she goes from kind of drab earth-toned clothes into, you know, bright, colorful stuff. So that switch wasn't very clear. Also, I didn't like at the very beginning, you saw her in her original state, because then it takes away the surprise of her change.
Yeah.
But it's because we're stupid. That's why they had to show us that. What? I'm not kidding. They have to show us and sorry, baby.
Just calm the child.
Oh, just calm the child. Yeah. But this is one thing, and I don't want Casey to hate me, because I do love Meryl Streep. But I think the actor should have been cast a little younger. That's just me.
I don't disagree. But
just like Little Red the little girl who played Little Red would have been perfect in 2-3 years. Meryl Streep would have been perfect about 10-15 years ago. I'm just putting it out there.
I also think Meryl should have been Mrs. Lovett in Sweeney Todd, but
that would have been good.
I mean, if you're going to cast Meryl Streep, right? If you're not going to go like Hollywood young actress, why don't you just cast Bernadette Peters? she's only 1 year older.
I agree. Bernadette Peters is awesome. Why didn't you just do that?
Wouldn't you just cast Bernadette Peters? I don't understand.
I agree.
She can still do it. I saw her do it twice in one day. She can, like, last week. Okay, like last month. But still, she can do it.
And she's Bernadette fucking Peters.
Mm-hmm. I told Sue last night, I'm pretty sure that Bernadette Peters is either a goddess or a vampire. I don't know which.
I don't care.
She still looks
the same for the past like 20 years.
She's awesome. So can we talk about No More? No More, No More?
I am so upset that they cut that song. That is the song that has me crying every time.
It's the through line of the entire story, mm-hmm. is that relationship. And the theme of the whole story is the relationship between parents and children and people transitioning from one section of their lives to another. Duh. Did they have a dramaturg? No.
As soon as we knew that they were cutting The Mysterious Man, right? You knew that they were cutting No More.
No.
That was the dumbest decision.
The dumbest decision. And was his father, like, in that scene that was supposed to allude to No More, was he an apparition? Was he, like, actually not there? Or was he actually there?
I don't think anyone
knows. Or what was that? Was he in someone's imagination? Is he living alone in the woods? I don't understand.
And it's funny you say that, because since they explained everything so ridiculously in detail, like, because we're so stupid, why they didn't explain that, I don't know. Mm. Sorry.
But the thing with The Mysterious Man, his purpose is to cut back on the tell, don't show thing. So when you cut him out, you have the baker saying lines like, I don't know if I'm going to be a good father. Something, something, something. You know, all this exposition is, you know, verbalized. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is not necessary. I know, Lorelai. I'm upset too.
I know. I won't ever show her this movie. I'll show her the other one.
Good parenting.
I did think that Rapunzel was beautiful. There's something. Also, this is like so technical, but when I've seen stage production and when I did the stage production, when she pulls the hair, she only pulls like a little section of it. And for some reason, it was annoying to me that like a whole half of it got cut off. I don't know. That is so picky.
That doesn't bother me because I have seen larger chunks.
You've seen, okay.
Cut off before. But what it, the next time she lowers her hair, it doesn't appear any shorter.
Right.
And that's the part that bugged me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There you go. See, okay. So that was more like a technical thing, I guess, that was sort of weird. Because the hair actually looked like a rope wrapped in hair when the baker's wife was holding it, you know?
Yeah. So while we're on Rapunzel.
Okay.
Rapunzel should have died.
Yeah, she should have died. A lot of them should have died. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Well, the other thing is
Disney
that Rapunzel
was not about
insane.
To kill one of their princesses.
When you hire Meryl Streep, you will have Rapunzel die. Because that is the arc of her character. That she's trying to be a good mom. She basically runs her daughter away to when she runs under a giant's foot on purpose. And basically, the witch has lost everything. And so now she doesn't care about anything.
And also, what about Rapunzel's twins?
I know!
Like, doesn't... Isn't... Like, you know?
No, Rapunzel's death is like the last straw before last midnight. That's the last thing she has to lose. And that's what leads to the Sondheim Mental Breakdown song of this show.
Which is a great mental breakdown song. And I love that line. So much. The one that you used in your intro.
It's so great.
I love it. I love it. You're so nice. You're not good. You're not bad. You're just nice. I love how that is an insult. I love it so much. And it's like part of my life. I love it that much. Ugh. So
it's so true. Like the whole phrase she says to them, I'm not good. I'm not nice. I'm just right.
Yes. Oh. Love it.
And of course, Little Red sings earlier, nice is different than good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So another little through line like that. So, but see, that's us just talking about what we like about the story, because we obviously love it and we love the stage play, or we wouldn't be talking about this.
I mean, but perhaps we should have said it from the very, very beginning that we clearly all have a long history with the show itself, with the original material and score.
Right.
So we're probably a lot harsher on this movie than
most. Oh, yes. I have a relationship with this show. Like, I did this. I mean, this was my entire, this was like 5 months of my life when I was 16 years old. I mean,
So here's a good thing for me to say. Kevin is not as attached to this show. He watched the original stage production with me, and then he watched the movie with me because we were recording this podcast.
Okay.
And he said that if we had paid money to see it on the big screen, we would have left like wanting our money back.
Ooh, interesting.
And he brought up another interesting question, which is, can you make a good movie out of a Sondheim musical?
Maybe not.
I didn't hate Sweeney Todd.
I didn't hate Sweeney Todd.
I'm not saying I loved it. I didn't hate it.
Right.
Yeah, I think Sweeney Todd could have been better.
Yeah.
But I truly believe in the hands of someone who understands the material.
Yeah.
That, you know, anything can be turned into a movie. Well,
I think it could be, as long as the audience is given enough credit.
Exactly.
And everything is treated well, because there's some things that don't translate very well from stage to screen. And I get that.
Exactly. Yeah.
But then there's some things that you can't, like, that can, like pacing. Pacing is an important part. I mean, and the funny thing is that Sondheim, because of the way the show is the composition of the libretto and everything, the pacing is like in there. Like it's, he doesn't really leave that much room for interpretation, because it's, you know, you just do what the music tells you to do, because isn't it almost an operetta?
Like almost.
There's very few really in the play from what I remember, because it's been a while, but there is some scenes, but a lot of it is, a lot of the action is moved forward through talking, through singing. And so it's there. And even during the speaking parts, if you're doing the play, there's music, there's pacing, there's something going on. There's, you hear things, you know, and it's all in the score. but I don't know.
Kevin brought up a good point the other day, which is something I said in our 2012 podcast about the stage show, which was Joss Whedon should have directed the movie.
Well, I feel that way about most movies.
I was about to say, we know that Joss Whedon understands musicals, but Rob Marshall should, right? Yeah, he has directed Broadway musicals. I just feel that Rob Marshall, and I have felt this even before watching this movie, is a much better choreographer than he is director.
Interesting, yes.
Here's the thing. The director is supposed to be the GPS. He's supposed to know, he or she is supposed to know what the map looks like. He or she needs to know where everything is. But more importantly, they are supposed to guide you from point A to point B if you're lost.
Right.
And he is just, you know, he's just the map. I think he's just the map rather than the directions guiding you from here to there. He's a visionary, just like Tim Burton is. Also, the movie looked a lot like a Tim Burton movie.
It did, kind of. It did.
Visually, absolutely.
Rob Marshall is a bit of a copycat.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, you know, the visuals for the original scene design do have that kind of twisted branch feeling to it. So it's not like it's completely out. You know, the similarities may be, I mean, I wouldn't want to say a coincidence because you're right. It is almost, it's very glaring. But Into the Woods kind of, you can see it kind of going that way. But I think
it should have been funny.
It should have been popped up a little more, I think, in the quote unquote first act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Having a little more polish, having a little more, like, it feels like, because I always thought for, you know, just because we all do this, we all redirect and direct stuff in our heads. Or if y'all don't, I do. But that in the first act, it should almost feel fake. It should almost feel like a Disney movie on, you know, in real life, where the fabric doesn't really have a lot of texture.
It should feel like Enchanted.
It should feel like Enchanted. And then when you make that transition, then it's like you go opposite. You go from Oz to Kansas. You are suddenly in this real, here these people are dropped in this real world, but you do it organically enough that it doesn't change everything, but it just, the shadows just start growing. And that wouldn't that be, you know what I'm talking about? Am I sounding crazy?
No.
like here you are, you're on the same set, but the shadows just start growing around everything. And you know, they even talk about it. When you go into the woods, they go into the woods and they're like, nothing is like I remember it. I was on this path and now there is no path. I mean, doesn't that make more sense? Anyway.
It's interesting that we're getting into this because between that and like all of the cuts that messed with the themes of the show, it makes me think of what Bernadette Peters said at that reunion performance they did at BAM. And she said that she loved doing Sondheim shows so much because on the surface, they're about this. But when you really get into the material, they're about this.
Yes.
And this is important.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that this, right, is not in this movie.
Yeah. Agreed. It's just, like I said, it even though it's inexplicable that it's James Lapine or maybe James Lapine being tied to a chair by somebody at Disney, like in the Misery movies,
which is also about to be a Broadway musical.
Well, that'll be interesting.
Is it going to be a musical or a play? Real quick.
You might be right. I think it might actually be a play.
Okay. That makes more sense.
I think it just went on sale. I don't really know yet.
Well, this has actually been very cleansing for me, ladies.
I know.
And I like, this is cool too, because, you know, Jen's not familiar with the stuff at all. And it's something that's very important to me. And I'm glad that you guys are also as committed to it as I am so that we can have these kind of conversations, you know, with full knowledge, you know, because if Jen watched it, it would be a little different because her perspective is different. Of course, she might calm us down, but we wouldn't want that.
No,
not in this case. But I have to agree with you about, or excuse me, disagree with you about the casting for The Baker's Wife, which was one of the first things you mentioned.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
She just made me angry, but I think she made me angry because she wasn't Joanna Gleason.
Well, okay. And this is the thing, is that I actually first saw one of my good friends who was like a mentor of mine play the Baker's Wife. And for a while, even when I saw Joanna Gleason, I had seen this friend of mine play the Baker's Wife, and she actually was trying to have a child at the time and couldn't. And the show meant so much to her. And so when she sang it, it felt, you know, I had this like connection with that part and this person, and I saw Joanna Gleason, and of course she was amazing, but I have this idea. And then I saw Emily Blunt, and when I first saw her, I was like, she's too young to do this, because I had this idea in my head, this woman who was 30 or something when I was like 16. And I have to remember, I'm now almost 40. So my judge of how old people are is totally different than it was then. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started watching it, I didn't like her, but she grew on me throughout. And maybe it's just because she was a step above everyone else. That's just me. I don't know. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting Joanna Gleason at all. But I do think that the normality of the baker and his wife were lost in the movie.
Agreed. Agreed. I do agree.
That's
with that.
Why they stand out so much, because they are
weird. You know,
they're supposed to be the normal people among the fairy tale characters.
Right. They're supposed to be the glue that holds the whole thing together. Because mm-hmm. they're the one thing that you don't know about. You know about all these other stories and how he connects to all these other stories as the huntsman, quote unquote, or the guy that steals the magic beans, or the guy who sells, who buys the cow for the magic beans. Mm-hmm. Those are all characters that exist, but Into the Woods postulates that they're all the same dude trying to do the spell, you know?
And it was created as an American fairy tale.
Right.
And they're all British.
Okay, here's my problem. It may be me like nitpicking when it comes to bad movies, because in Disney movies, it doesn't matter. They're American. Some of them are British. And then you get the one lone candle who's like speaking French. But in like a bad movie, like accents stand out.
They do.
And Chris Pine was kind of like Kevin Costner in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where he couldn't decide if he was American or British.
But I had to forgive him, because I feel like he was pretty committed to the whole ridiculous prince thing. I feel like that was the closest to what I imagined that character to be.
Right.
You know, because he's supposed to be ridiculous.
Was great, right? Like you said before, but sometimes his delivery was such that I couldn't understand how he could be so hammy and so unfunny at the same time.
Yeah.
Especially in the second half, in the act two part of the movie.
True, but that could be directing too.
Right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, yeah. Yeah.
Do we have much more to say? Do we want to start wrapping up?
I think we can wrap up. Okay. I'm good.
I feel like I need to get this out there. I feel really bad tearing apart movies like this. And the mm-hmm. reason for that, and even like, I mean, it is abundantly clear in all over the podcast that I am not a fan of the JJ verse and the Star Trek movies, but it's the same sort of feeling I get for hating on them, in that they still have the potential to bring new people to the original material.
Agreed.
Therefore, I don't want to bash them too hard, but this movie is definitely not something that I will consider watching again personally.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree. If I wanted to watch Into the Woods, I'll just watch the stage version that was taped.
Yeah. What if that had never been taped?
Don't say things like that.
Well, that's the thing with theater, is that so many original performances are lost to time because, you know, for some reason, like copyright or whatever, those just don't get filmed. And then
thank goodness for bootleggers.
I know, right?
I only semi-joke when I say I don't know how my life would have been different if I didn't have the original Into the Woods that I could watch anytime I wanted to.
That's how I feel about a lot of the Sondheim shows that were filmed, because it was the same with Sweeney Todd. It was the same with Sunday in the Park with George. These kind of round me as a performer, as a writer, and as a creator. Just if this movie were the only thing going for me, you know, I don't know where I would be. I don't know how I would feel about Sondheim. I think I would find him very confusing.
That's sad.
All right. Well, I appreciate y'all doing this with me and including me in this show. Thank you.
I'm glad we could make the schedules work.
I know. Stupid lives.
Yeah, those things always getting in the way.
So next time on Anomaly Supplemental will be an interview that I did with Kayla LaFrance, the season 2 winner of King of the Nerds. And that will be out in about 2 weeks. It's all recorded. It just needs to be edited up so it can get out to all y'all. And I think that is it. If you want to tell us anything about the Into the Woods movie and how much you hated it, I mean loved it, you can email us, and Meds will tell you how to do that at the end of the show. I am Sue.
I am Angela.
And I am Casey.
And this has been an Anomaly
Supplemental. This has been a goddamn mess. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening.
Do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
I'm trying here, you guys.